From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. No industry in Oregon has suffered as much decline over the decades than timber. What was once the key product in our state is not what it used to be. The fact that our nicknames, Silicon Forest and Silicon Shire, illustrate how tech is seen as our key industry now. Yet technology may be a key factor in reviving our timber industry. Today on the show, you'll hear from the Dean of the College of Forestry at OSU and the Director of the Tallwood Design Institute about how technology in the form of mass timber is leading to a resurgence in the timber industry here in Oregon. Aimed to both collaborate and compete with steel and concrete, mass timber is a renewable resource that can build structures that are getting taller and more robust than once thought possible. It's hard not to think about forests of trees when thinking about Oregon. And while our once mighty timber industry is smaller than it used to be, new technologies are aiming to reinvigorate this once dominant business. Ian McDonald, the director of the Tallwood Design Institute, and Tom DeLuca, the dean of the Oregon State University College of Forestry. Gentlemen, thanks so much for coming on and talking with us.
Thanks for the opportunity to be here with you, Michael.
Yeah, this is exciting. So, you know, Tom, I'm going to start with you. And just for our audience that may not know, you know, what is mass timber and what can it do and why is it so important?
Yeah, so mass timber is a broad term that covers engineered wood products that are basically taking smaller dimensional lumber and creating large panels and beams that can displace other structural building material in buildings such as steel and concrete. Steel and concrete are incredible construction materials, and however, they carry with them a very significant environmental footprint. Steel and concrete represent the number three carbon emitter globally. And of course, they are not in themselves renewable materials. You're using aggregate generated from quarries for concrete, and you're using iron ore generated from mines for the initial production of steel, although steel can be readily recycled.
Okay.
Whereas wood products represent a completely renewable material. It's a natural product and is incredibly versatile as well.
Okay. Ian, I'm going to go to you. Tell us about the Tallwood Design Institute. What are you? What's your mission? Give us the details on that.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. Nice to be here. So Tallwood Design Institute is about 8 years old. This is our ninth year, I guess, and we were established by the state of Oregon to specifically, work across the disciplines of wood science, forestry, structural engineering, and architecture to help to get, wood into structural building applications wherever it's appropriate to do so, mm-hmm. While, keeping a close eye on sustainability and responsible forest management at the same time. So we partnered across Oregon State University and the University of Oregon. Broadly speaking, it's the College of Forestry is our home base at OSU. We partner strongly with the College of Engineering at OSU and then with the College of Design at University of Oregon, which hosts the architecture school. So we have a lot of research running across the disciplines on different aspects of mass timber. Some is very technically focused on things like, seismic resilience, fire resistance, acoustic properties, and such, building physics, the energy efficiency of these structures, the biophilic kind of properties in terms of, positive physiological and psychological benefits of being in wood spaces. These have all been kind of the subject of research. And then we also look at, life cycle analysis, how sustainable are these products, having these conversations around, is it better to leave wood in the forest longer or to harvest them and put them into a long-lived wood product like mass timber, where you could arguably have lifespan of 100 years of the building and then recycling and reuse beyond that.
Okay. Tom, obviously timber has been such a huge driver of the Oregon economy for, you know, a century or more. And, you know, it has taken a hit, you know, starting decades ago. Is mass timber a way to kind of, you know, still, you know, develop that economic engine in a more sustainable way than maybe it was done 50 or 100 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah, Michael, I think that there's a lot of aspects of mass timber that create new opportunities for this future. And when you look at mass timber as part of a larger system, it makes a whole lot of sense. I think that, you know, that when you refer to, you know, 30 years ago and a downturn in timber production, a lot of that was cessation of timber production on federal lands. And that resulted in a partial cessation of timber production from federal lands. And of course, that would have resulted in a downturn in milling activity and with it a closure of a lot of mills and loss of jobs. The mass timber represents a alternative wood product that is being generated out of can be generated from a number of processes. One, you know, example that I didn't give earlier is mass plywood panels. So it's still using sheets of veneer that are, glued into these, you know, plywood on steroids, for example. But the point being that these are traditional products that then are being generated into new engineered products that have alternative uses that we wouldn't have been able to achieve with the traditional product.
Let me just reintroduce you really quickly to the audience. We're talking with Ian McDonald. He's the director of the Tallwood Design Institute, and talking to Tom DeLuca, the dean of the OSU College of Forestry.
So it doesn't really change the sourcing of the timber for the production, but it changes the utilization of the products into a new space, which allows wood to be used in, for example, building taller than you would have been able to do with traditional stick framing of a sort of traditional construction.
As the kind of new shiny object on the block, mass timber is, first of all, attracting new attention to the industry from investors that might not traditionally have looked at mass timber. And also, you know, there's kind of a pull factor through the supply chain. So a really good example is Timberlab. They're a company that is the sister company of a major national construction firm. They've been doing mass timber in Oregon since about 2017. That was, you know, really when they got started, and they've been steadily incorporating more capacity. You know, they began with construction and then added engineering assistance. A few years ago, they opened a glulam fabrication facility near PDX. That was where they would take glulam from other producers, and they would do the complex computer numerical control fabrication work, which allows you to really precisely fabricate these parts so that when they arrive on the job site, they go together very quickly. And they just recently broke ground on a large factory in Millersburg, mm-hmm. That will produce cross-laminated timber. It will have significant capacity. But the other interesting fact about that is they have, in order to kind of complement that investment, they've gone out and purchased two glulam mills that have been around a long time but are in need of upgrading. And so they're bringing in the capital to be able to upgrade those facilities and make them really state-of-the-art. And they've also purchased a sawmill in Philomath, which has been dormant for a while, and they're looking at retooling that to supply specifically the needs of their cross-laminated timber mill. So we'll have a slightly different focus, but really it's kind of an example of how the mass timber industry is helping to bring back to life and reinvigorate some of the legacy timber industry. Through our Tallwood Design Institute's REACT Consortium, this is a group of 20 companies. REACT stands for Research on Engineering, Architecture, and Construction of Timber Structures. And it's a group of companies that are kind of pioneers in the mass timber space. They're architecture firms, engineers, construction firms, and others. And they have they get together, contribute their own money, and then they jointly decide what kind of research they want to get done with those funds. And one of the first projects we worked on was something called the Point Support Structural System. This is a very efficient, fast construction method using mass timber, where you have no need for lateral beams to support mass timber floor panels. And it's difficult to visualize when we're just talking about it, but essentially you can save on, for example, if you have a given height limit in a municipal area, you might be able to squeeze in a couple of extra stories just due to the savings on having those lateral beams.
Hmm.
Unfortunately, the test data wasn't available in the US, and so it became very difficult for any developer to get a permit for that using that system. It was actually used in the Brock Commons 18-story wood dormitory that was constructed in Vancouver, British Columbia in 2017. It was a great success. You know, the building went up 18 stories in 9 weeks, so literally two stories per per week. So, and it was so fast that the follow-on trades were not ready because they didn't believe that the structure, the wood structure, could be put up that quickly. So it was a great learning lesson there.
Yeah.
But the data was never really put in the public domain. So one of the first things we did with our consortium members was we funded this point supported testing. Essentially involves setting up these huge panels on columns and applying huge loads to them and breaking them and giving the data to, you know, permitting officials and to show that this system is performing as they would need it to under the prescriptive building code. And so once we did that work, immediately the same year, we had one firm who was a member was able to get a permit for a 19-story building in the Bay Area in California. And another firm is now ready to start constructing a 12-story building in Portland using that system. And then we're using that information on our own campus to design two or three student residencies that will be built in the next 3 years. So you can see kind of the instant application of that work in the marketplace.
Tom, I have a question for you. It's fascinating to hear what mass timber can do. Are there limitations?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think that those limits are constantly being tested. There are buildings going up around the world that each year they're a little, you know, taller than the year before. Ian could give you the exact numbers of stories, but I think the tallest mass timber building in the U.S. currently is the one in Milwaukee, if I'm not mistaken. And it, you know, yeah. And what is it? It's 25. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's 6 stories of concrete and then 19 stories of wood on top.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So 25 stories total with, yeah. And of course, we wouldn't have thought that possible 10 years ago here in the US, and of course it's happened. And so but when we start thinking about limitations of the product, I mean, there are just the products. There are some fundamental ones that I remember presenting to a group of Chinese industry visitors when I was at the University of Washington. And the first question they asked us when we were sort of talking up the future of mass timber was, well, what about termites? So that was their biggest concern, was, you know, how could this possibly work in an environment where you have termites? And so there are things that you would do with steel and concrete that you simply would not try to accomplish with wood, and the two partner up beautifully in hybrid buildings. I think Ian, I'll turn it to you to take that a little further.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, research is kind of pushing the boundaries of what's possible, and building codes have been enacted in the United States in the last 3 years that are allowing for, instead of us having to, every time someone builds a mass timber building, having to go out and say, all right, well, this doesn't conform to the prescriptive building code, but it performs just as well. Instead of having to provide, you know, third-party testing, physical testing, or some kind of third-party peer review, which was true of the earlier buildings, now it is possible to build certain types of buildings within the prescriptive building code, which is great. But that always starts off quite conservative, you know. And, you know, for example, one area is that the in these new code provisions, you can build a certain number of stories, but there's a certain limitation on the percentage of wood that can be exposed. And that's partly, you know, protect the timber in case of fire. Now, fire mass timber performs very well in terms of fire. Generally, you have what's called a charring effect that's well known, and it's kind of similar to if you have a big log, you throw a massive log on your campfire, it won't really burn unless there's a large amount of heat being generated by the fire. What will happen is it will char on the outside, and then that char layer will kind of act as a protective coating for the core of the log in this case. So in mass timber, it's a similar principle. So you simply design, for example, a large glulam beam would have an extra kind of sacrificial layer of mass timber that you would account for to be consumed during a fire. And you have very, very predictive, highly predictable rates of charring. So you can allow for 2-hour egress in the event of a fire, similar to any other material. You know, the code provisions that came in were quite conservative regarding how much timber could be exposed. And so we're doing more research to try to prove out that it might be possible to expose more timber. One of the other areas is when you have a beam and a column in a building connecting together, the conventional wisdom is that the fire can get into the gaps in those connections. And so we're literally testing columns and beam connections with gaps in them intentionally left there to see if there is more charring that penetrates further into those layers. So we're looking on a very practical level at how we can overcome those existing kind of perceived limitations of mass timber. But a lot of it now comes down to economics. You know, there's good solutions for seismic issues, for fire, for durability, for acoustics, and so on. But of course, everything has a cost. And if you can do those things more efficiently, achieve that performance more efficiently, then you're ultimately going to result in more buildings being built with mass timber versus concrete and steel, which is what we'd like to see at the end of the day.
Yeah. Tom, last question for you is simply this. Obviously, the inputs, the wood, is under threat, if you will, because of the massive amount of wildfires we're having and hotter fires, larger fires because of climate change. Does that enter into this equation in terms of, you know, hoping that you're going to have enough stock to be able to, you know, continue this this impressive feat of using mass timber to build so much more?
Yeah, that's a great question, Michael. I mean, if you look at the production of timber in Oregon, about 70% of it comes from private industrial land, and that accounts for only 22% of the total forest area. And the remainder comes from federal forest lands, which account for, 65% of the total forested land base in Oregon, and then from tribal lands and state lands and small private landowners. And so the point being that the vast majority of timber production is coming from a relatively small footprint on the landscape. While those private industrial plantations are under threat of increasing wildfire activity, the majority of fires burning in the state are of course burning on where the majority of land area is, which is in the federal land base. There is actually very, relative to what production levels were on federal land historically, there's very low levels of volume of timber coming off of federal land. And on those stands that were previously managed and then not managed, the stand density is exceptionally high and creates a greater fire hazard than would exist under the natural conditions that forest might have existed under, or even if it had been continued to be managed and there were pre-commercial and commercial thinning operations that were conducted in them. So the point being that there is this large amount of land base with overstocking of smaller diameter trees that we need to address the fuel problem on. And at the same time, there's potential value in harvesting those trees and putting them into engineered wood products or into traditional wood products. And so that remains an additional output of timber that has been somewhat idle or slow, greatly slowed, I should say, over the last 30 years. And we do export a lot of timber from the state of Oregon, and that has the potential to go into mass timber construction as well. But as Ian pointed out earlier, economics play a major role in all decision making,
sure,
including what you know the outlets for your lumber production.
Okay. Well, this is a fascinating topic. I really appreciate both of you coming on. We've been speaking with Ian McDonald. He is the director of the Tallwood Design Institute. And we've been talking with Tom DeLuca. He's the dean of the Oregon State University College of Forestry. Gentlemen, again, thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Can protests against giant retailers work? Tomorrow on the show, you'll hear from an expert on retail at the U of O who says yes, if done right. I'm Michael Dunn, and this has been Oregon on the Record from KLCC. Thanks for listening.